Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Shabbat Shalom. Of all of the traditions, customs, and comments regarding this week's festival of Purim, one of the most curious is found in the second chapter of Maimonides' tractate Megillah, his Mishneh Torah, his authoritative code of Jewish law. In the time of the Messiah, Maimonides states, all the books of the prophets, all the sacred writings read in public, in other words, all the Jewish holidays will be annulled with the exception of one, Purim. There will be no Passover matzah. There will be no Chanukah latkes. There will be no Jewish holidays, only the messianic making of hamantaschens, jelly, poppy, chocolate, and otherwise. Only that will continue in these future times. Despite a proof text being offered, Maimonides never explains why all these other observances, marking not insignificant events like creation, the Exodus, the giving of the Torah, should cease in the Messianic era, but Purim, a lighthearted holiday given over to drinking, to costumes, to silliness, and most of all, laughter, that holiday and that holiday alone should endure. It's a curious passage, and it's one that raises a series of questions and calls for a thoughtful, theologically minded response. So it may surprise you to hear that I want to approach this question of by sharing with you not one, not two, but three jokes. Cringeworthy. You see, these past few months, I've started a new tradition. When I meet with every bar or bat mitzvah student, this week's included, I ask each student to tell me their favorite joke. Why I began this tradition, I'm not quite sure. It breaks the ice. It shakes things up a little. I'm always looking for good material. And quite honestly, I think that everyone should walk this earth ready with a joke or a Dvar Torah. And why not begin in seventh grade? When the student leaves my office, I write the joke down, and I've already collected quite a few. Here are three quick ones from this year. A man walks into a library and says, "Can I please have a burger and fries?" The librarian responds, "Sir, this is a library." To which the man says, "Oh, I'm sorry. Can I please have a burger and fries?" Joke number two. A man brings his dog to the talent agent, boasting, "My dog can speak." The talent agent says, "Prove it." The owner turns to the dog and says, "What's on the top of houses?" "Roof," the dog replies. Then the owner turns to the dog and says, "What does sandpaper feel like?" "Rough," the dog replies. As the agent begins to lose his patience, the owner turns to the dog and says, "Who's the greatest baseball player of all time?" "Ruth," the dog replies. Having seen enough, the agent throws the man and his dog out of the office and onto the street. Cast out, the two begin to walk away, and the dog turns to the owner and says, "Maybe I should have said DiMaggio." Joke number three. A guy goes on vacation and decides to sweeten the pot for his house sitter. "I'll add $100 if while I'm away you paint my porch. Paint cans are in the garage." The guy returns home from his vacation to find a note that reads, "Took care of it. By the way, it was a Mercedes, not a Porsche." All right, for the good of all involved, I'm not gonna share which kid told what joke. But I will share that these particular jokes that I just shared, for better or for worse, all came by way of Heschel students. A fact that should prompt a bit of soul searching, I think, on the part of the lay and professional leadership of my children's day school. But the real reason I'm sharing these jokes, and I promise it will eventually circle back to our original question, is to explore the nature of the telling of a joke and the laughter that it prompts. There are, to be sure, all kinds of humor. There's a Seinfeld sort of observational humor, why people say what they say or do what they do. There's satirical humor, sophomoric humor, and my favorite, slapstick humor. There's humor whose aim it is to make people feel superior, and there's humor, classically Jewish, that's used to soften a people's pain, a punching up, if you will, at one's oppressors. Now's not the time to go into the full anthropology of what makes a joke, but for the purposes of this morning, I simply want to point out what I think lies at the core of the substance, the setup, and the delivery of many a good joke, and that is the delicious moment when the expected is replaced with the unexpected, the anticipated with the unanticipated, the DiMaggio from the dog, the Mercedes, not the Porsche, the hushed burger and fries. A good joke hangs on the ability of the teller to establish in the listener a set of assumptions as to how the world is supposed to be, and then unexpectedly substitute a different reality. And it's in that absurd gap between the world as it ought to be and the world as it actually is, between the ideal and the real, to which we respond with the most honest expression of our humanity, and that is laughter. What is laughter if not the human attempt, in the words of the philosopher Ted Cohen, to live with that which we cannot understand or subdue? Laughter is our response to the incongruities of the human condition, our coping mechanisms to address the yawning chasm between our hopes and expectations and our actual reality. Each one of us, and all of us together, every day, live with this gap between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be, as individuals, as families, as people of faith. We wonder how it is this world of ours, created by God and deemed by God to be good, to be tov, more often than not, falls short of the very bar God set out for the divine self in the beginning. We hear the news reports and we feel the pain. We're disappointed by those around us, and we ourselves fall short of our own self-expectations. We haven't been our best selves. We've failed to distinguish between right and wrong. This world of ours does not lack for shortcomings, some caused by others, some self-inflicted, and some acts of God or of nature. But to be human is to contend with the defects of our world and our existence. And laughter? Laughter is but one of many human responses to the gap between the world as it is and the world as we believe God intended to create. The most obvious response, of course, is tears. We are hurt physically or emotionally. Life, this world, is not supposed to be this way, and so we fill that gap more often than not with our tears. Another response, apropos of our present setting, is prayer. Prayer can be understood in many ways. But in some fundamental way, prayer is the act of giving voice to our deep-seated aspirations, our hopes for how God's underachieving world ought to be, but isn't. Oseh shalom bimromav, hu yaseh shalom. May the God who creates harmony up there, please, 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 create that harmony down here on earth. That is what prayer is. It's stretching out our hands with the hope of yanking down a piece of the heavens to be experienced here on earth. What about anger? Anger is another arrow in our quiver, responding to a world that so often disappoints. But then again, so is beauty. There are many reasons why people go to a museum or a concert hall, but one of them is to develop an aesthetic sensibility, to be inspired by a painting or a song, to imagine a world different than our own, and maybe, just maybe, be inspired to make that idealized world a reality. I could go on with the taxonomy, and there are probably many responses that I haven't mentioned: tears, prayer, anger, beauty, laughter, and otherwise. They're all very different, but they're all responses to the shared human attempt to come to terms with the gap between good and bad, between who we are and who we seek to be, between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be. All of which is where Purim's message comes in. Setting aside the fantastic story of Esther and Mordechai, about which I spoke last week, the Mardi Gras rituals associated with Purim all share a transgressive quality, a narrowing of the gaps and the blurring of the lines that otherwise would set the contours of conditions of our lives. On Purim, we're supposed to dress up. We're given permission to be the people we otherwise would not and cannot be. On Purim, we're supposed to drink, an activity which, if nothing else, serves to be a psychological costume of sorts to grant us the fleeting illusion that our problems aren't problems, that our world really isn't so bad, and that everyone is a bit more beautiful, a bit funnier, and a bit better on the dance floor than they actually are. In fact, the tradition teaches, on Purim we're supposed to drink to the point that we can no longer tell the difference between the wickedness of Haman and the righteousness of Mordechai, which I'm not exactly sure what it means, but it seems to indicate that Purim is a window of time to imagine a world where the gap between absolute good and absolute evil is no more, a time of innocence not experienced since before eating of the fruit of the garden itself. Most of all, Purim is a time of laughter, by way of silliness, Purim plays, and otherwise, the one time of year that we are literally commanded to be happy, to bridge that gap by any means necessary between the world as it ought to be and the world as it actually is. My intention, truth to be told, was not to give a heavy sermon today. Purim's upon us. It's a joyous time of year. I actually saw Seinfeld this week, and I was hoping, in full disclosure, in honor of the season, to give a lighthearted sermon on what makes funny funny. But then the week turned dark, and once again we were reminded of the hatreds that plague our world, of the persistence of Amalek, of the violence that seems to have become normalized in our society. You know, yesterday, in the midst of rewriting this sermon, my phone lit up with text messages on my family messages because the Los Angeles mall at which my mother was shopping and the Jewish day school at which my nieces go to school was on shutdown due to a suspected shooter. We're reminded of this all the time, of the thin thread upon which all of our lives hang. And most of all, I thought of those 49 souls who, when attending their Friday prayers in the New Zealand mosque, had their lives ripped away by way of a murderous act. And I felt and I feel, as I'm sure everyone in this room does, the tears and the anger and the need for prayer brought about by the absurd gap between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be. And it was in that moment that I began to understand why it is that Purim alone will be the festival celebrated in the time of the Messiah. Because I don't know, and nobody knows, what exactly will happen in the time of the Messiah, but I have to believe that at its most basic, It is a time when the world that God intended to create is finally and forever the world that actually is, when the peace in the heavens is also the peace on earth. Purim will be celebrated in the time of the Messiah because Purim is a time when, without costumes, we will become the people we want to be, when, without the crutch of alcohol, we return to that Edenic moment of moral purity, and when, with a heart filled with joyous laughter, the breach between the world as it is and as it ought to be is bridged once and for all. Purim is the only festival that will be celebrated in Messianic days because every day will be Purim, every day filled with aura, simcha, sason, vikar, with light, with joy, with festivity, and with honor. As caring human beings, as people of faith who treasure our houses of worship, our hearts are broken at the pain and the suffering of the week gone by. We are angry, we are tearful, we are filled with prayers for those lives lost, those souls in pain, and this broken world in such desperate need of repair. We're all in the shallow now. But let's not forget that what we also need is a good laugh. What we also need is a good joke. And what we also need is a fun song that brings a smile to our face and reminds us of the beauty of the world. And maybe, I hope, we'll even share that drink that we all so need to make this ugly world of ours a bit more tolerable. It's not a lot, but then again, it's not nothing. It even has a name, Purim. And until the arrival of the Mashiach, it's just going to have to do. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.